Okay, guys, welcome to another episode of whatever I'm calling this. So today I'm going to be talking about A Curse Upon Thee, Arc 2 specifically. So I'm going to be talking about what I'm actually doing when I put words on page for this thing, because the craft problems here are weirdly specific, and I think that's what makes it interesting to break down. Although I kind of say that about everything, but there we go. So first, there's a baseline constraint for all this. This is a Once Upon a Time story, which, based on the commissioner's request, I merged with... Wait, did the commissioner request it? It might have just been me. This might just be my bullshit. But they asked for Once Upon a Time, and I was like, okay, how do I make this pull people in? So I went with JJK. And of course, it has jump chain mechanics baked into the DNA because of the celestial system. Now, that means I'm working with three different tonal registers that absolutely should not fit together, and the entire prose apparatus has to make them feel like they belong in the same reality. You've got Fairy Tale Cheese written by Disney, a shonen power system, and gamified progression all occupying the same stupid story space. So the craft challenge isn't just write the main character well, it's write the main character well while everything else is making it impossible to. So let me start with the engine, and that's going to be Finn's voice. Finn is the... every voice for every story, of the main character at least, really any POV character I write, relies on an observational accumulation engine, which is why if you notice that some of my chapters that don't have a direct, like, tight third person sound a bit robotic, and I hate that for myself, but it's what it is. Now, Finn's POV operates through accumulation, not subordination. This means his brain doesn't just nest information. Like, it stacks things. It stacks observations, it stacks statements, it stacks any little minor thing that fits his identity, his idiolect. Am I using that word? Am I pronouncing that word right? Probably. So, and then he makes conclusions, of course. Here's the pattern. Let's say the trek back from the ruined castle didn't have a soundtrack, unless you counted the squelch of mud under feet and the almost synchronized wheezing of five people who had officially spent a good 2.5 days testing the limits of human endurance. Now see, that's one independent clause, one qualifier, and two noun phrases doing parallel work. Squelch of mud is the concrete sensory, of course. Almost synchronized wheezing is observational assessment, and testing the limits of human endurance is the conclusion drawn from these inputs, not nested, but sequential. Now, if you're a reader, you definitely won't notice this, and I'm pretty much just doing it for myself, so... But the point is, just because you don't notice it doesn't mean that it doesn't go a long way in giving you a feel for the story. So Finn notices things in order, processes them in order, and the syntax replicates his cognitive mode. Now, compare that to when I write Regina, like later on, or right before that. Wait, no, that was not... This is from, like, way earlier in this arc. So, here's a specific line. Dark eyes caught the only other movement in front of her, the second Regina took two proper steps into the dim light of Gold's pawn shop. Now, see the semicolon there? That's doing dramatic pause work. Proper steps is evaluative diction. Regina is measuring her own movement quality, and the sentence structure itself is performing status consciousness. It lets you know that Regina feels like she's above other people. Now, that's a completely different brain, and that's what I do for every different character I write. And it's a fun thing to do, because you have to literally sit in somebody else's brain. I'm basically giving myself schizophrenia for your own enjoyment. So, there's that. But yeah, Finn's syntax is a bit flat by design compared to someone like Regina, although he's much more lively than David Nolan, for example. He's not analyzing the relationships between things. He's noticing them and deciding what they mean in relation to him after the fact. That's why the sentences in Finn's chapters tend to run through negation and self-correction. Things like, not like anyone else is in a better mood, though, or, yeah, pretty much that. So he tries a position, he tests it, and he adjusts. And the prose goes to show how he's replicating his real-time processing. It's not polished retrospective. That's the difference between writing someone who's in an experience versus writing someone who's recounting an experience. Finn is always in. Now, that's speaking of in, we're going to go into interiority. Interiority as interruption is a little trait I use. And here's where the POV gets very specific to this story in question. And I think A Curse Upon Thee has actually helped me improve my writing almost as much as my original work, because I changed my entire style around the time I got this commission. And I have to thank the commissioner for it, because it improved my own writing skill, and I can't thank him enough for that. So, but yeah, here's where the POV mechanics get specific. Finn's internal monologue does not flow smoothly at all. Like, it's designed to interrupt. Like, if he says something like, "What the fuck is this thing's problem?" Finn spat a mouthful of mud out as he ducked back, the green creature stumbling from its whiff, throwing himself onto some thorny bushes. Chest heaving as his locket bounced up and down, the redhead sucked in ragged lungfuls of the cold night air. "I didn't even do anything." Now you see right there, that is a question, an action sentence with nested clauses, tracking simultaneous movement, and then a physical state sentence, and then a protest. This means nothing to anyone but me. However, those aren't blended at all. They're distinct cognitive packets, and it's meant to feel simultaneous with the fight. Everything is processing at the same time. The italicized thought isn't deeper interiority. It's the same level as the question that opened the sequence. I'm just using the formatting to basically show how everything is always there. Like, it's always there for Finn. Now, this is important mostly because Finn is not a reflective guy. He's not a reflective character in general. And I generally don't like writing over reflective characters, which is ironic because my original work features a very reflective character. So I'm surprised that came so easy. Write what you know, I guess. Maybe I'm just like, not the point. Why am I talking about that? But yeah, Finn isn't reflective. He doesn't do the thing where the prose dips into memory or analysis mid-scene. His interiority is always reactive, always immediate, always tied to what's physically happening right now. And the only time I have him go into his head for longer than a beat is when he's trying to solve a problem. And even then, the problem still exists while the world is in motion. Let's see. Third rule, dialogue mechanics, especially with Arc 2, the fairy tale collision. The dialogue in this arc is doing heavy lifting because I've got characters from different worlds who process language differently, and the prose has to make that clear without being precious about it. Now, here's Mulan and Finn. "I knew Lancelot well, sorcerer. He was a brother in arms. Loyal and true. If Korra was wearing his skin, using his voice..." She shook her head slow, looking away from Finn. "I should have seen the seams. The failure rests on my shoulders alone." "Oh, please." Emma's grunt came from the back, where she walked behind her mother, voice ragged and raw to no one's surprise. "Let's not do this right now." Now, you see right there, so Mulan speaks in complete formal, if a bit archaic, sentences. "The failure rests on my shoulders alone." That's courtly speech patterns, measured and declarative. Emma, however, interrupts with fragmented modern American. "Oh, please," and "let's not do this right now," of course. The prose is not telling you they're from different worlds. The rhythm of the speech is performing it. Because this is not a TV show, I don't have costumes and appearances to give you this, so I have to make it even more clear in idiolect. And, of course, dialogue. Now, so Finn, here's Finn. "Because Finn doesn't look at the face," he clicked his tongue, thinking back to that annoying fight 2 nights back. "People can lie with their mouths or their eyes or whatever, but the residuals? Nah. She was covered in some ugly energy. And on top of that, you ever smell a rose petals dipped in blood? That was the old lady." Now see, first we start off with a third-person self-reference, some casual profanity, a rhetorical question that's actually asking, nah, as a complete sentence. That's modern American teenager, filtered through someone who's been code-switching. Not formal like Mulan, and not fully cynical like Emma. He's somewhere in between, and his dialogue shows it. Now, see, the craft move here is not that I'm not using dialogue tags to tell you how someone sounds, because I hate dialogue tags. I spit on them. I used to use them all the time because I didn't think about them. They were just normal. That's how you write. But then once I stopped, I could never stop wanting to beat White and Strunk to death. The elements of style is shit, and that has nothing to do with anything, but I hate White and Strunk so much because the book is nonsense. Like, of course, if you're starting out with writing, it's good. It does help you. But once you actually know what you're doing, that book is just ridiculous. Again, a tangent. I need my Adderall. back to the point. So when Aurora says, "I know not what opinion you bear of royalty, Sorcerer Finn." So the inverted syntax and formal diction is doing all the work. I don't need to write "Aurora said formally" because the sentence is formal. But yeah, so that's dialogue done. The fourth part, and this is a major one about how the whole story works, and if you can follow the path of what I'm doing, this might be a bit of a spoiler. But so jump chain perks in this story are not used as jump chain perks. There's no system appearing to him and telling him or showing him what he gets. The jump chain perks are laundered through the narrative. Now, this is the weird one, and most people wouldn't understand. But I believe very strongly in ludonarrative harmony. You know when you're playing a video game and your character does something and it affects the actual gameplay and story, and it's called upon, like it's mentioned in the story and it's treated as part of like the character's actual behavior? That's ludonarrative harmony, when gameplay and story are fully integrated. And that's what I'm doing here. So this is the thing that is specific to almost any jump chain related projects I do. The architecture is a constraint-driven blotting tool, and that generates prose problems for me. Problems I have to solve at the line level. So here's how it works mechanically. Finn gets a randomly rolled perk, and then I have to reverse engineer narrative circumstances that make those perks feel earned rather than just handed out by RNG. The perk isn't the story. The story is how I make the perk feel like it belongs. So let's say, I can't really get into examples right now, but if you've read the story, you kind of get it. Is that a dog? Why is there a dog in my house? If you're hearing a dog in the background, I don't know whose dog that is. I don't know why there's a dog in my house. Probably I'm not going to edit that out, so bear with me. Anyway, this is ludonarrative harmony at the craft level. The game mechanics and the story mechanics have to reinforce each other, and the prose is the bridge. If the drop feels arbitrary, the reader feels the RNG. If it feels earned, they feel the story. The difference is how I construct the sentences leading up to it. Fight scenes, they have their own rhythm, and it's different from the rest of the prose, because I usually shift to some verb-first sentences, and most modifiers get stripped out. Now, this is funny to me, but it probably won't sound funny, but it's entirely unrelated. Anyway, so let's say a pine tree flew through the air, crashing into the canopy above them in a shower of splintered wooden pine cones. Heavy thuds marched rapidly toward the clearing, and the tree line parted as another guttural roar tore through the night. Now we have subject, verb, object, with flew as the action. Crashing is the result. There's no delay, and no nested clauses slowing it down. The sentence moves in the same direction as the tree itself. And that's when Finn responds. Emma scrambled backwards through the dirt, hands up to shield her face from the blistering heat. Now it's character, verb, and the action is reactive, aka scrambled, shield. The sentence structure is performing defense versus offense. Attack sentences are always going to be active and forward-moving unless I'm doing something, you know, innovative or just tricky. And defense sentences are going to be reactive and protective. The grammar itself is what I use, as well as, you know, the pros to do the fight choreography. But I also do something specific in the Finn fight scenes that I don't really do in a bunch of stuff that I write. I generally track Finn's confusion about his own level of power. He's constantly surprised by what his body can do now because he's amnesiac. He's an amnesia. You know what? Words are hard. And coming from me, that's just... But yeah, the prose has to show that without stopping the action. Like, let's say Finn's hand shot out, fingers closing around the object before it could hit the dirt. All four women jumped backwards, Mulan's curved sword halfway out of its scabbard before Finn quickly raised his hands. Whoa, relax, it's fine. So basically, he catches something falling without thinking about it. Everyone else reacts like it's threatening, and he has to de-escalate because he is faster than his own social awareness. And that's character work happening inside action choreography. Pros doing two things at once. I feel like if I did the tonal blending, I would just be talking for a good 30 minutes. I'll do another audio thing about the tonal blending. But thank you for listening to this, and apologies for all the interruptions, but I have a headache. Thanks for listening.